It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast, episode 314, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. Just when fans thought BYU basketball had turned a corner, the Cougars dropped 3 out of 4, sinking any tourney hopes and spoiling what had become a bit of a surprising season. Matt and I break down what went wrong against LMU and Gonzaga and lay out what might make the rest of the season better. Also on this week's show, the Super Bowl, Han Solo, and football recruiting. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast. You can find this show and other great podcasts at DeseretNews.com/podcast. You can find us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. And you can listen to the rest of our conversation, or actually all of our conversation, right now. So Matt, there are a few things I want to talk about less than a loss.
Yeah, I mean, who likes to talk about a loss?
And we are going to briefly talk about the Patriots in this episode. I get it. Most of you hate the Patriots, and you feel not bad for us at all, which is fine. I'm not asking for anyone's pity, right? So, that being said, we are going to talk about it a little bit. And our first thing, though, Matt, before we... let's start with the commercials. Matt, Super Bowl commercials. I'm a Super Bowl commercial aficionado. I love them.
Is that how you pronounce that word? I'm not sure you're pronouncing that correctly.
I don't know. Does it matter? We're on a podcast. Don't people just read?
You're apparently not an aficionado. You're a Super Bowl commercial aficionado.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I just said. Didn't I just say that?
Right.
Anyway.
There's some nuance to what I said, but that's fine.
I don't do nuance, okay? I don't do nuance. Matt, best Super Bowl commercial.
I liked the Tide ad, but I feel like there was just so many Tide ads.
They were all Tide ads. And now, when I've watched a few ads since then, I think, that's not a Tide ad. His shirt's dirty.
That's brilliant, though, because then they have you thinking about their product during all the other commercials. You know what? All of the clothes are clean in this commercial. Everybody's clean.
Oh my gosh! It's a Tide ad!
And he's just popping up in those things? Nope, this is a Tide ad.
Now, my dislike of Eli Manning is well documented, right? Well documented.
Yes.
I thought that I've had the time of my life with him and Odell Beckham was one of the best ads.
That was pretty good. My favorite part of that ad was pulling up the video from the movie and showing it to my 13-year-old son so that he had context for it. And he really thought that commercial was funny.
You want to see another cool one? There's one out there that's He-Man and Skeletor doing it in a bar, doing that dance.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so, you know. Anyway, so Matt, this first tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
References a Super Bowl ad. This is from CougFan82 on Twitter, at CougFan82. He says, on a scale of 0 to Detmer, how excited did the Solo teaser trailer make you for May 25th? Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag climb on in. Matt, the Solo trailer, meaning the Han Solo movie, 0 to Detmer, how excited are you after seeing the ad?
I'm like probably Sarkeesian excited. Wow, you're popping open a drink. I think you're about to be way on one end of the scale here.
I'm not very excited. I would say... I shouldn't say I'm not very excited. It's not way on the low end. I would say I'm like Riley Nelson excited.
Riley Nelson was a good quarterback.
But he was a little controversial.
So you are. You've got some excitement.
It's Star Wars.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there.
It's Star Wars. I love Star Wars. I love Han Solo. I'm just nervous about this one. I mean, like, Rogue One was cool because you went back to this part of the story that we don't know and told it. And yeah, there were characters like, Darth Vader's in a little bit and a few other side characters are in it. But it's mostly about new characters, right? So you're telling something totally different. Going back and telling somebody's backstory...
That's going to be hard to do.
It's tricky. So KookFan82 had a second part to his question, had nothing to do with movies. He said, also, is the Pats Super Bowl loss all on the poorest defense? Matt?
Not all, but a great deal of it.
All of it is on the defense. They stopped the Eagles once.
I absolutely agree. Defense was the number one problem, right?
Yes.
They gave up a gazillion yards and a billion points.
They got the one turnover, which was good. A lucky turnover, by the way.
Mm-hmm. That one was just the ball bounced the right way.
Yes.
That wasn't like the turnover that the Eagles got at the end of the game.
No. It was not a purely forced turnover like what the Eagles got at the end of the game.
But I'm also going to say that the Patriots' offensive line struggled.
At times, they did. There were pockets where they seemed to do really well, and then pockets.
Pockets.
Yeah, see what I did there? They did not. So I agree with you, but New England, the offense had 600 total yards.
So where's Malcolm Butler? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not all in on Butler anyway. I think Butler has gotten a lot of mileage out of a single play, which he didn't make on instinct. He made because Belichick told him 2 days before the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, hey, when they get down into the goal line, they're likely going to run this play on you, so make sure you step in front of the football.
Right.
But
Butler's pretty good.
Right, he's pretty good. And for that defense, which had some struggles this year, was one of the big contributors on the defense. And to sit him...
Bizarre. Weird.
Very, very strange, right? Say, oh, well, this is football related. He had a bad week at practice. The guy played 97% of your snaps all season.
Yeah.
He has a bad week at practice, and you bench him for the Super Bowl?
Something weird happened.
There's more to that story. That's a big part of the problem.
Kook fan asks, did your BYU fan and keep you from blaming Vannoy? I thought Vannoy had a decent game. So I'm not blaming Vannoy. I think the other piece is, let's give hats off to Nick Foles. He threw some passes that, quite frankly, I did not think he was capable of.
And I'll tell you, one thing he is definitely better at than Tom Brady,
catching passes.
Hello.
Hey.
That just looked awkward. But, you know, when they ran that play, I turned to my son and I said, we're in trouble. If they're running that at this point in the game, we're in trouble.
I thought the play call was fine. My biggest disappointment wasn't a play call. It was when Brandon Cooks decides to leap over a guy that's not already down.
Yeah, the guy was like 6'2". You're not getting over that, Brandon.
Yeah, you juke him and then you try to go around.
Try to go around.
That's your game, right? You're not Taysom Hill.
Even Taysom Hill isn't going to hurdle a full-grown man standing straight up and down. Like, this is who does that?
It was fantastic. I have to say, listen, if I weren't a Patriots fan, this was, once again, I think people should love the Patriots because every freaking Super Bowl the Patriots enter is entertaining. As the Gladiator said, are you not entertained? You know what I mean? Like, every Super Bowl the Patriots enter is exciting. So people stop whining about the Patriots, all right? Chase Blyle, that's at Chase Blyle on Twitter. Last Patriots-related question. What are you all predicting for the Patriots roster, including head coach, over the next 3 years? You and I were talking about this off-air beforehand. Matt, Brady and Belichick will be... let's see. Take it or leave it. Brady will be, and Belichick will be gone in 3 years.
Oh, I take it. They're both gone.
Yeah, I am. And I think you'll see a massive turnover on the roster. And, you know, chances are, based on history, that means the Patriots become mediocre again. Right? I mean, that's how these things typically work. And the Patriots, quite frankly, are running on house money in that. You know, usually, I mean, there's very few franchises that have been this successful over this period of time. So you're not going to expect another 10-year run, especially when you don't have an heir apparent quarterback to take Brady's spot. But besides that, I don't know. I predict the coach will not be I was going to make a joke about this. Now I can't think of his name. Kansas, Notre Dame, former coach.
Weiss? Charlie Weiss?
Yeah. Won't be Charlie Weiss.
Hey, Jen, I loved is I watched the two Bills or whatever they were calling it.
Yeah, yeah, it was great.
With Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick. The greatest, greatest out of that was the old, old footage of Patriot sidelines with Charlie Weiss and his bowl cut.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, that thing was beautiful. That was just, that was really something.
Yeah,
that
it was really something. It was really something. I remember, you know, back in the day a lot of what people talked about with that bowl cut was that he looked like Lloyd Christmas or Harry yes. Dunn off of
Oh Dunn my gosh. not a flattering look.
Yeah, I'm sorry, like Lloyd Christmas. I guess Jeff Daniels did not have a bowl cut in that movie, did he?
No, I don't know. His hair was all over the place.
Yeah, his hair was all over, but looked like Lloyd Christmas. All right, Matt, let's leave the Patriots talk behind and jump into the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Do I need to edit out that pause? That was a fat pause, as they say in the podcasting business. Matt, Jordan Chapman, former BYU Cougar, is loving his experience playing for Boston College. He, of course, transferred there. He is a graduate student and is a starter this year and a big contributor to the Eagles. Matt, I'm not going to go through the whole article, but you can read it. Trent Toon published it on Deseret News and kind of talked about, you know, his marriage and getting involved in a culture that he had learned about and been involved with on his mission. So all these cool things about his experience. I was sad when he left because I thought he could contribute and because of who, you know, his dad is and what his dad meant to BYU. But it's great that he's thriving someplace else.
Yeah, no, it's good for him, you know, and I'm glad to see him succeed. We talked about this when he left. It was a better situation for him.
Yeah.
So it's a win for him.
BYU second baseman Brennan Anderson has been named preseason third team All-American by the National College Baseball Writers Association of America. He is a senior from Draper and was top 10 in several categories last year. As a junior in including runs, hits, and he's the leadoff hitter, will be a captain, and all sorts of other things. So good luck to the Cougars and the upcoming baseball season and Brennan Anderson.
There you go.
All right, Matt, let's talk hoops. Now, you said I didn't like talking about losses. I'm not going to like our next 10 minutes. I'll be honest.
Yeah, there's a lot of losses here to talk about. This is just disappointing.
So let's talk about LMU first, okay?
Mm.
So Loyola Marymount, we didn't talk about them much last week because I just assumed this was a 15-point
We thought this
victory.
Was a layup.
Yeah, and it turned out not to be a layup, Matt. It turned out to be one of those layups that miss. That was terrible. It was about as terrible as that
there.
Game.
There was something there, but you lost the handle on
it. I lost the handle on it on my way up. So Matt, here's the deal. You lost by 7 to Loyola Marymount. They are 7-5. That was their 7th win and only 2nd win in the conference. Now, I know their RPI didn't drop a ton after this game. A few people pointed that out on Twitter and whatever else. I don't give a crap about any of that. This is the kind of loss this team could not afford to have. Period. We've talked about this. They can't lose 3 conference games a year to teams they shouldn't lose to. They just can't. And this game to me is frustrating and stupid. And we're going to talk way more about the Gonzaga game here in a bit. But this is the losing to Gonzaga on the road in a game where you were competitive with them and play a little bit better down the stretch. You could potentially win. Is way less frustrating to me than losing to Loyola Marymount, who is 2-10 in the conference.
And only one player really looks like you're basically kept in that game on any level because of the play of a single guy. And everybody else just lays an egg, essentially.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was a massive, failure on both sides of the ball, right? And you look at their team, and nothing against Loyola Marymount, but the talent difference is massive, right? And it was just terrible. Matt, we got terrible. We got one tweet bag question out of this from Brian Thacker on Twitter. That's at Brian J. Thacker. He says, why did we look like we couldn't penetrate LMU's offense? And why did it take so long to go into a zone defense? Seemed to be working well in prior games. Hashtag tweet bag, hashtag climb on in. Matt, that climb on in thing seems to be catching
on. It's taking on a little bit of life.
Yeah, it's taking on a little bit of life.
And it's helped that I've stopped whispering it. I've noticed that people are using it more now that I'm not whispering it.
I think that helps. The creepy whispering
that was
bad.
Weird.
Yeah, that was very weird. Matt, I don't know. I don't want to get into the specifics of the breakdown of that game. I'll just say this. Defense had been really, really good over the past couple of months. They were not really good in that game. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know that we needed to play a zone as much as we just needed to play better defense.
And I think that's what the coaches were thinking. Like, no, listen, we don't need to make the switch into a zone. We just need to snap out of whatever this is and start playing some real defense. And they were kind of, I think they're trying to coach the players into that before going into the zone, because we should have been able to run the same defense we had been running against these guys and not have an issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So if you're a coach in that situation, you're going to end up spending some time, for better or worse, in this case worse, trying to figure out what exactly is wrong and how do I fix this?
Well, and 15 turnovers and they had 8, right? That is a maybe not the difference in the game, but that's a pretty big difference, right? And again, against a team like this, we should have forced more turnovers and had fewer, right? And that could have been a win, right? That could have been a W.
Yep.
Matt, the Gonzaga game is a different one, right? So let's get to the ridiculous stuff first. Number one, nobody dressed up as return missionaries. We talked about it last week.
No, nobody returned. Nobody dressed up as missionaries.
Oh, did people dress as return missionaries?
I don't know.
I didn't hear about that.
Are like serial killers. They look just like everybody else.
Sorry. So nobody dressed up as missionaries, full-time missionaries, because then you can make the same joke about how we're all missionaries. So Matt, we talked about it last week. I don't really care about this very much. I think it's good that Gonzaga was sensitive and decided to say, hey guys, lay off this stuff, because it may annoy some BYU people.
It may offend some people. Yeah,
I'm fine. I'm fine. That was nice.
Yeah, it's just college kids being stupid.
So Gary Payne, that's at FastBreakGP on Twitter. And by the way, if you want to climb on in the tweet bag, you can do so three different ways. You can do it on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout, on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout, or good old-fashioned email, RiseAndShoutPod@gmail.com, which reminds me, I think we have an email one I didn't add to the agenda, so I'll have to look that up here in a second, Matt.
Oh, the listeners love it when they get a little peek behind the curtain like that.
That's right. It's totally a peek behind the curtain. People love that kind of stuff. They eat it up.
They love it.
It was Chase Blyle, actually. Huh. We'll get to you here in a second, Chase, because I think you overreacted to this last weekend's games.
I can't wait for you to throw out his question sight unseen to me.
Yeah, you
That's
love
gonna
that.
That's going to be
great. Too. Okay, so Gary asked this. Were you impressed with the dedication of the Gonzaga crowd and the air ball chant every time Hartnett got the ball? I sure was. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag painbag. And then Justin Sweeney makes an appearance, Matt.
Sweeney!
You're so slow lately. This is like,
no, that one was right on. I saw that one coming. That wasn't slow. Come on.
That was way slow. Listeners, you tell us, slow or not on the Sweeney. He's replying to Gary and said, there should be a statute of limitations on that cheer during a game. Four more Sweeney's touches.
Such a lawyer. He's a lawyer, isn't he? An attorney?
Yeah, he's an attorney. Four more touches for that player, then move on, question mark. Okay, first thing, were you impressed with the dedication of the Gonzaga crowd? I am. I love that stuff.
That is awesome.
And do it, you can Justin.
Right. And you know what? They should do it next year.
Next year. Yes. Yes. And if any Gonzaga fans travel down to Provo, you do it in Provo.
Yes, you ride that thing. You know, I had a friend around the time I was finishing at BYU. His claim to fame was he believes or claims that he made the Arizona State kicker cry from the front row behind the bench.
By like, doing what?
He missed a kick or something, and he just lit him up. You know, and this is before the internet. This is before you could like look stuff up. Like I went to an LSU baseball game last year, and they got on the right field or some students. They got onto his Instagram account.
Oh no! Oh no!
And they were asking him about his Halloween costume from last year. I mean, it was craziness, right? This is before you could do those types of things.
I would like to see Hartnett when he makes a shot next time. They still chant airball.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, yeah, I love it. I love it. I love that. So here's the thing, Matt. Gary then asks a serious basketball question, so we have to get back to seriousness. Gonzaga's stat line seems to be messed up. Luke Worthington and Elijah Bryant seem to have been switched. Any analysis on that? And Zag's Deion Bryant, was it really that good? So Matt, let's break that down a little bit. I'm looking at the the box score right now. Obviously, Elijah Bryant had one of his worst games of the season. Okay. Shot the ball poorly. I think, Matt, I mean, 1 out of 11 shooting is a bad night. 0 of 8 from behind the arc.
And if you're him, that's a really bad night.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was a combination of, I thought they played very good defense on him, but he also missed some wide open shots, right? So it's not all about their defense. He just had a bad night. And unfortunately, the way this team is constructed, he and Childs cannot have a bad night.
Not at the same time. Yeah, nope. But I think part of it also is to, I think that if I were a Gonzaga fan looking at this game, I would even attribute to him missing those wide open shots. I would attribute that to the defense. They got him off of his game.
That's true. Fair enough.
And I think they got him to a place where he struggled. They put together a game plan thinking that if they could get Elijah off, that we would not be able to put the rest of the pieces together to make a run at it.
I think it
seems to have some merit.
I think their game plan was stop Elijah Bryant, slow Yoli Childs. I don't think they have the big men.
Slow your Yoli.
I don't think they have the big men to actually stop him because of his athleticism, and let TJ Haws do whatever the heck he wants. Right? And that worked, right?
Well, if you look at the LMU film, what do you see? If you can knock everybody, even if TJ Haws is having a good game, if you knock the rest of that stuff off kilter, we can't get to you. We couldn't beat LMU when TJ Haws was the only one who was on.
So Luke Worthington, by the way, excellent game, 16 points, 3 rebounds, 6 of 8 shooting. And he had not played a lot against LMU. Matt, the thing that sticks out to me from the box score is 5 guys with 32 minutes or more and nobody else with 10 minutes played. Okay?
Right, right.
We played 5 guys against Gonzaga, basically. Okay? That is weird to me. And as well as Dashrup has played this year and Nixon have played this year, I mean, Hartnett, I love the guy, and he does some good things. I don't understand why he's playing 34 minutes a game. I mean, Celius went from playing 20-something, we talked about this last week, to basically another non-factor day against Gonzaga. But I don't think we can win games against good teams playing 5 guys.
No.
Well, maybe eating 5 guys.
You always win when you eat at 5 guys.
Sounds delicious.
That was my meal of choice post New York City Marathon, by the way.
Is 5 guys still open, I wonder? They're probably closed.
There's always a 5 guys open.
Mm, Fair enough. So what's your take on that? Am I being too literal on that? Because if these are the best five guys, play them the most minutes. I just think guys.
No,
get
what
worn
is this
out.
Church ball? Listen, you don't win at this level. I mean, even at a WCC level, right? You don't win if you have to play the same five guys.
Yeah.
You're playing at a level where nobody's going to be able to hold on to that and keep momentum. Maybe you win a game that way, but you don't win strings of games down the stretch and get yourself into an NCAA tournament on the legs of five guys.
Now, a lot of teams, including Gonzaga, will play for significant minutes seven guys, right? Like, they'll go seven deep or eight deep, right? I'm not saying you got to play 10 deep, right? But if you look at these last two games, you know, we against Gonzaga, we went nobody, you know, only five guys played 10 minutes or more. And against LMU, it was eight, right? We Dastrup, Nixon, and McKay Cannon each played significant minutes. Like, and those three guys basically minutes were cut in half or less against Gonzaga. And I think we got to play guys more, and I think Hartnett playing 35-plus minutes a game, I don't know what he's bringing. I mean, he's got some good defensive skills, but on offense, he basically doesn't exist, right? Like, he's just occupying space. He's not a good enough penetrator to create for other people, and he can't hit three-pointers. So I get him as a defender, but man, with these offensive struggles, I feel like you're better off getting somebody else on the floor. And with Haas and Elijah Bryant, you've already got two really good ball handlers, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. That piece is.
I can't. I know this is a lot more interesting when we argue, but I can't really disagree with what you're saying. It would be disingenuous and fake.
You should just do it. We should be like an ESPN yell at each other show or a Fox Sports One yell at each other show.
Fox Sports One.
You're ridiculous, Matt. Your hair is ridiculous. Your face is ridiculous.
We have to come up with all sorts of series of hyperbolic statements.
That's right. This is the worst BYU basketball team ever.
No.
Ever.
This is the best team we've ever had of all time. Achieving.
Fire Dave Rose. Fire him today.
This is our Final Four team, and we're squandering the opportunity.
Bring Danny Ainge in to coach. He'll come coach.
Or Andy Reid.
He's probably going to be available soon. Speaking of...
I don't know. The NFL head coaching carousel right now is pretty weird.
So here's Chase's email, okay? I'm not going to read all of it, Chase, because it's long, and we try to stay under an hour.
And Adam doesn't read good.
No me read good. He says...
What is this, the Center for Ants?
He says, well, BYU basketball sucks. Okay, that's how he starts the email.
That's the intro to the email?
No, he actually says, hey guys, still love the show, keep it up.
Oh, okay, well, so we did start out with some positivity.
Yeah, yes, there was some positivity. But then
keep it up, well, wow, that's harsh.
He lists off some things. He's not sure. He thinks lack of depth might be our biggest problem. And I can't say that I disagree with that. Though I actually think we have the depth, we're just not using it. And then he says, Coach Rose not playing the right people. Is that an issue? Is it his trust, too much trust in certain players? Lack of good recruiting? But BYU is hurting right now. We can't trust our guys to go out and beat the easy teams because we only get production from two guys every night. Okay? So he sent me a spreadsheet. Okay?
Wow, this was an entry into the tweet bag with an attachment.
Correct, with an attachment.
All right, that's aggressive.
Elite teams, historically, in the WCC, have five players averaging 8 points or more a game. No, this isn't, I'm sorry, this isn't in the WCC, this is everybody, okay? The only exception right now to that is Virginia, which I watched them the other day.
So when, they're fun to watch. These are statistics just for this season?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Anyway, I'm not going to go through all this. He does a really good job. I looked at this email earlier. I think this is our biggest problem today. Okay. To answer Chase's question about the depth or whatever. our biggest problem is we don't have reliable scores after Yoeli Childs and Elijah Bryant. We just don't. Who can you say we can count on night in and night out after those two?
There's not anybody.
I mean, Haas has played better over the last month or so than he had at, you know, the month or so before that. But I'm not going to say he's been consistent. And the players that I feel like maybe could be more consistent, you know, we thought it would be Haas and Seljaas, and they just haven't been. But, Matt, that lends to a bigger question to me. We thought this team was not going to make the tournament, right? We said that at the beginning of the year, both of us.
Right.
We did not think they would make the tournament, okay? They're not likely to make the tournament. Why does this feel like such a big disappointment when, in fact, they are almost exactly hitting the expectations that you and I laid out for them when the season began?
Because we started to overestimate the team.
Yeah.
Everybody did. There were some cool wins. There were some flashes. And we all started to think that maybe we were wrong about what this team's ceiling was. I think there's a couple of interesting things here that have been pointed out, right? First of all, I love this analysis of being able to draw this, you know, over-under line and say the teams that are really competitive are able to do this with this number, you know, with a certain number of guys, score a certain number of points, right? And be able to say if you can do that, you're going to get yourself into that group. And we're not doing that. I also look at what's happened with the lineup, and I think we have this conversation at the beginning of every basketball season, right, where Rose is still playing with the lineup and tinkering with who the starters are, and we felt like this season he got there really fast. And so did he get there because he just didn't have – he had only had confidence in those five, six guys?
I don't know.
That's why everybody else sat. And now that we're into the stretch, what we're discovering is we don't have the depth to have five or more players scoring above 8 points a game. We don't have the depth in a game against LMU even or Gonzaga. If they shut down, you know, our top one or two guys, there's really nothing we can do. I mean, I feel like all of this kind of ties together. But there were signs of this earlier on, coming back to your original question, that we didn't think that this team was a tournament team early on. But I think if you go back and listen to the conversations you and I have had on this podcast, even 2-3 weeks ago, we started to talk about this team like they were a bubble team, maybe a last four in type of team, a play-in game or something.
Yep.
And we all bit onto that, and it's become pretty clear at this point in a glaring way that that's just not who this team is.
I agree.
And that's disappointing.
I agree. And we just you look at our losses, and when we lost, we've struggled to get more than two people to score the basketball. And Chase lays that out in his spreadsheet. We just have not. When we're bad, it's because and again, Bryant has to be able to have off nights, right? Against Gonzaga. Maybe we can't win if he has an off night, right? The way this team is constructed.
Yeah, but you have to be able to beat LMU. You should be able to beat LMU with him on the bench.
Yes, exactly. He should be, you know, he could call in sick that day, and you should be able to beat LMU, right? Like, you should be able to call on McKay Cannon to play 25 minutes and beat LMU, right? That's the frustration to me, is those losses. Now, do not take this as a fire Dave Rose commentary, okay?
No, I haven't said anything about Dave Rose. Oh, no, you.
But I'm just saying, because those people came out on the Twitter after both of these losses, and it's not time to even consider firing Dave Rose. I do think Chase's point about maybe we lack the proper depth. But right now we're tied for third for the second year in a row. Third is in question whether we can be third in this conference or not.
Well, and then you've got to think about it. You know, depth might be an issue, right? But look at what's happened. And I know this sounds kind of like an excuse even before I say it, but look at what's happened over the past couple of years. We've had some players that they thought were going to be around. They thought they were building a team for a year like now or maybe next year. And
yep.
People didn't stick around. We talked about two of them already tonight.
Yep.
You know, we got a guy out in Boston who they thought was going to be, who might be around for a little while. You got another guy floating around in Europe somewhere who we thought was going to be around for a little while. And it's hard when, you know, when your the backyard you recruit in sees that developing and they all start exploring different options and going other places. And so you're having to find, you know, other pieces to fill in. And maybe you don't get the right chemistry. Maybe you don't get the right person, you know. And you know, you look at like Hartnett, for example, right? He can be a liability on one side of the court.
Yep.
And you know, but he's one of these guys, you know, he's a transfer who came in as a result of some of what I'm talking about here. And so I there's a lot to this. There's a complicated series of events that got us to this situation. I know that it's Dave Rose's job to adapt to those kinds of events. But I don't know that I look at what's going on right now and say, oh, yeah, you fire the guy that basically brought this program out of the basement.
Right, right, right. So, Matt, this week they have Santa Clara, who we beat by 34, and San Francisco, who BYU beat by 10 the first time they met them. They have to win and should win both these games. I'm not going to preview them and talk about the players.
If they lose both these games, I'm going to change my mind about firing Dave Rose.
Yeah, that would be the worst stretch of his career.
Yeah, that'd be real bad. That'd be like 2017 football team bad.
Yeah, that would be 2017 football. Hey, that's a good lead-in. That's a good lead-in, Matt.
That's what they call a segue in the biz. Segue.
So let's before we do that though, volleyball split with UC Santa Barbara. They've got UC San Diego, who's never beat them, Matt. On Friday night, and then starts conference play, or maybe that's Thursday night on the road, and then starts conference play against USC on Saturday. So that's what's coming up for volleyball. They're 6-4 and ranked 7th in the country. Matt, football, signing day is coming up. Signing day is a little bit yawn-worthy this year, right? Because of the early signing day.
I'm actually yawning. I actually yawned.
The good news
is... That was a real yawn.
Friend of the podcast, Ben Criddle, had announced that Gunnar Romney, who is probably going to be the best-rated player in this recruiting class, who had been flirting with Arizona State, right?
Doesn't everybody flirt just a little bit with Arizona State?
A little bit. He is coming and will suit up and play for the Cougars in 2018, Matt. Gunnar Romney, Akali, this wide receiver group that we talked about last week a little bit, because we talked about Dylan Cauley, this could be a completely different group than what we thought we were going to have for 2018. Because even when Romney was committed, I think a lot of people thought he would be going on a mission right out of high school and therefore would not be on the team, right? And Dylan Cauley, nobody was talking about him a couple months ago. So you look at this group and you say, huh, maybe this wide receiver group is going to be a strength of the team. I don't know. It's possible. I mean, Romney looks really good. And at 6'2", it'd be good to have another, big wide receiver.
We definitely need some help. We need help anywhere we can get it.
Yeah, when you have a season like we did, you'll need some help. So we got a question about signing day from Ronald on Twitter. That's at RonBond2015. You know, a lot of people use the year they were born as their, you know, in their handle. I'm guessing with Ronald that is not true.
Yeah, I'm gonna assume not. Or he's just incredibly advanced.
Yeah, I got a 3-year-old. They're not tweeting. I'll tell you that much.
I'm just getting, you know, just to be sure here, I'm going to pull up a profile here.
Okay.
So Ron Bond 2015, they don't do the egg picture anymore.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a profile picture. Is it a bot? Have we just been tweet botted? Oh, by the way, he said hashtag.
No,
climb
well,
on
no, Ron,
so it's not a bot.
No, Ron Bond. He does a lot of response to podcasts and BYU sports stuff. I mean, I think Ron Bond is an actual person.
All right, so he's a real person. Matt, he asked this: who are they possibly getting at secondary in this class? As I feel this is their weakest position. Matt, you and I talked about this last week before the signing of these wide receivers. I didn't think it was defensive back. I thought wide receiver was clearly the weakest position on the depth chart. Matt, any thoughts on that? Are you worried about the depth of the defensive backfield?
Yes.
I'm not as worried. We've got two experienced corners coming back, right? I would feel better if Ahu was on there, but he's going on a mission, so he'll be back in a couple of years. I don't know. I'm not super worried. It's not super deep, but is our defensive backfield ever deep? Right?
No, it's never, right? If we have a decent starting core in the defensive backfield, like, we all feel good about that, right?
Yes. As far as people that were signed in signing day, the defensive back, Isaiah Heron, got a verbal back in October. I guess we'll find out if he signed here in a little bit. And he's a two-star defensive back out of Las Vegas. I don't know that, quite frankly, any of the group that is coming in, that we will have anybody that plays a significant role in the defensive backfield next year. So I think recruiting, and that's typical for BYU because of missions and other things, is not where you will find the next people that will be impactful in the next season, right? That's not typically how we have it work. So I guess the answer to Ron Bond's question is no. But there's nobody you're going to get super excited that's going to come in and make an impact.
Nope.
I don't think that's how it's going to work. That being said, there are some people, let's see, that might be coming back from their missions, and I'm trying to find them here on the spreadsheet. I don't know that I'm seeing anybody pop out, but there's probably somebody I'm missing here. So that's something to think about, because there might be some guys coming off their mission, but I'm not seeing anybody on the spreadsheet that I have a defensive backfield. So I think most of the people we are already people we know that are on the depth chart for next year. Gonwalaku, Wilcox, Anderson, Lee, Warner, Jacobson. These are all people. Shelton, we already know. Any other thoughts on the defensive backfield, Matt?
No, I mean I don't even know what to say.
So next week we're going to start talking about spring football, and we're going to start kind of our spring football preview, and we're going to break it down.
I can't believe it's that time of year again. Isn't it awesome?
Yeah.
Because what do they start? As painful as last season was, I still love football.
Hope springs eternal in the spring.
We're undefeated, baby. 2018, we're undefeated so far.
That's right. And I bet you we win our spring game. Just saying. Bold prediction right here.
I like it.
So Matt, the other football news that came out is that the last coaching position was filled. I believe was that today? That was announced? Yes, it was today.
Yeah, it was today.
It was announced that the last piece of offensive coordinator Jeff Grimes' new offensive staff was hired, and that is A.J. Stewart, hired as the running backs coach. He recently came from Rice and was the running backs coach, I believe, there as well. So he'll be doing a similar role here. So the staff is in place. We got it all together, Matt, I believe, and here we are. Not a guy I had ever heard of, and I'm not seeing anything in here that is a BYU connection that I know of.
No, I see no BYU connection. Played at Kansas, was like scout team player of the year 1 year. A smart guy, got good grades. Played a little bit, has been coaching as a running back coach for 4 years at Rice, been a couple years there as a graduate assistant beforehand. But he's got a couple interesting stats coming out of Rice. I know it's Conference USA, it's Rice, but you know, last year they averaged 187 yards on the ground per game.
Yeah.
Which is in the top 40 in the country. One thing that really stuck out to me, I thought was interesting, was in 2015, he had four different running backs who had 100-yard rushing games.
Yeah.
You know, and which is interesting when you look at kind of what the situation was at running back last year for BYU, right? So this is a guy who, for one reason, I don't know what happened in 2015, why they had four different running backs in that situation. People get hurt. People get suspended. People hiding pot and frisbees. I mean, I don't know. but he was able, whatever the situation was, he was able to adapt there.
Yeah.
You know, so there are some things here that are exciting. I do like the fact, there's a part of me that likes the fact that he's not a BYU guy, right? This is Grimes going out and finding somebody who he thinks is the right fit for what he wants to do. I think it gives a little bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know what the word is I'm looking for.
I
totally lost my train
Diversity,
of thought.
Diversity?
That's not the word. Credibility?
Credibility?
I think to the offense, because you're grabbing a guy who's from somewhere else. And I think there's something to that.
Well, I mean,
you know,
they needed
a guy who was someone else, who wasn't one of Satake's guys, who wasn't a BYU connection. They needed somebody who was something else.
I mean, the whole staff, the offensive staff, looks very different than the last one, which was very BYU heavy. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Legends heavy, right? You know, you had Mahe and Detmer, and, you know, you look at that. Now, Roderick, of course, is a BYU guy, but the rest of the staff, and Grimes coached here before, so it's not, you know, it's not as if Grimes had no connection, right? But it's a different, it has a very different feel to it, to your point. That this is not that staff from last year recreated with a different group, right? This is a very different staff, very different feel. And, it's easy to say you're excited or that they sound terrible now because we don't know how they're going to work together, right? But I am very optimistic, and this changes none of my optimism. Doesn't make it higher or lower. I don't know enough about the guy, but I trust that Grimes can make a good, and Satake can make a good hire in this case. So, yeah.
No, we have no reason to be anything other than optimistic. I don't see any huge red flags with AJ Stewart where I'm like, I don't think this guy really belongs as a running back coach at BYU.
No.
And we have no reason not to trust Grimes.
Nope. And you know, and the thing is, we're not really going to find anything out until fall practice. And maybe not till the first game. I don't mean to, you know, totally, you know, rain on the parade of spring ball, but let's keep the expectations in check as to how much we'll actually find out about the quality of this offense. We may or may not have the quarterback who's going to play next year, even practicing, right?
Yep.
Because does Grimes see Tanner and or Bo as his starter? And sits them because of injury concerns in the spring, and then other guys just get a chance to play? Or is it truly a completely open competition, and in the spring, the guys that end up getting some reps maybe get a leg up on the other guys who don't, right? For whatever reason. I don't know, and quite frankly, I don't think the coaches are going to tell us, so we won't actually know, right? I know in spring ball, say Bo Hodge and Tanner do not play. Because of injury, right? Everyone's going to assume if somebody lights it up in spring that they're the starter, right? We're just going to assume that as fans. And come fall, it may not be that way at all, right? So I don't know. Am I off base? Do you think we'll learn anything about this offense that's substantial during spring football?
No. I mean, it's going to be a couple games before we really know what we're looking at if they play this right. So we're not going to know, and we're certainly not going to know anything in spring.
Yeah, we're not going to know anything in spring, but that won't stop us from previewing, doing a spring football preview, Matt.
And talking about how awesome we're going to be, because 2018 is a new year.
That's right. A new year. A new year, Matt. I was looking at a friend of the podcast, Bill Connolly, rated all of the football programs for the last 5 years, and I don't have it in front of me. It just popped into my head. I think we were like 40th or something, or 40-something, right? Even with last year's terrible season, we were a top 50 program over the past 5 years, okay? I think, I'm hoping that last year was one of these does not look like the other, and we bounce back. I don't think it's a bounce back to, like, we're going to be a top 25 ranked team or anything, but I think we, as they say, we revert to the mean, right? I don't think BYU's new established level of performance is the bottom third of NCAA football.
I agree.
So
this was an aberration. This is an anomaly.
Correct. And I know people will say, well, you have to start somewhere when the things come off the track, right? And I was not around the year that BYU basketball was maybe the worst team in the country, right?
Maybe the worst team in the country.
Yeah. Well, okay. The worst.
Be team hard pressed to find a worse team.
So I wasn't around for that. This season to me felt terrible, but didn't feel that terrible, right? And I think that might be part of the difference. That being said, there will be a ton of pressure in the spring, a ton of pressure in fall camp, and it will be extremely high. And if we open 0-3. Let's just say that the angst will be at the highest level for BYU football probably since, I don't know, ever?
Oh, it's since pre Lavelle Edwards, but at that point there wasn't any expectation. Yeah, so there was no angst.
Yeah, I mean, people were dissatisfied. You know, our dad watched those teams and he's talked about, you know, being unhappy after losses, but you lost a lot. So you weren't like, you know, there wasn't this tradition that there is now.
If we have a repeat of this in 2018, the angst will be unlike anything the BYU athletic department has ever seen, ever.
Yes, and it will be big. But like we just said, I don't believe that will be the scenario. We've talked about it. I think they're a 500 team next year, and that the goal is to just make it into a bowl game. And I stick by that based on the schedule that we have. But I don't think we will be sitting there going, crap, I mean, are we going to win 3 games? You know, I don't think that's the scenario for next year. So, but we'll get into depth position by position and walk through some of the things that we want to see next year for the Cougars. Well, Matt, that's it for this week. As I said, we'll be back next week. Any parting thoughts before we go? Do you want to take any shots at the West Coast Conference referees? Which, by the way, that's not why we lost either of those games, though there were some atrocious calls.
No, yeah, they're terrible, but that's not what makes the difference here, guys. Yeah, you gotta win the game.
Yeah, they are terrible, by the way. The West Coast Conference refs are just so inconsistent. It's bad. It's bad, man. They're just not very good. And the thing is, like, that is, we're not the only ones complaining. Gonzaga fans, St. Mary's fans, that nobody likes the refs in general, and I get that, but I think it's a kind of a consensus that the West Coast Conference refs are, you know, their Twitter game is good, that Twitter account is good, but I'm not sure that's actually them. That might be a parody account.
Yeah, that might not be them.
Maybe Bonnie Fuller runs it. I don't know. Anyway, well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. You can find this great podcast and other shows at DeseretNews.com/podcast. I actually have a new one coming out from Bleep, Matt, the other show that I do, where our brother Sam is on that podcast. Because, you know, what beats doing a podcast with your brother?
Nothing does. Nothing. There's nothing better than that.
And my co-host and friend of this podcast, Alan Seawright, is on there, and we do a Marvel Cinematic Universe draft. Should be posted in the next few days after this episode is posted. So go check that out at at DeseretNews.com/podcast. As always, you can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. Like us on Facebook. You can also go to iTunes, give us a rating, and let us know what you think about the show. Send us an email at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Thank you for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars. The streets I used to own.